What is it when is it because you're basically on with me like twice a year, once for the draft and once for fantasy football. Is that biannual or semi-annual? I forget.
I feel like semi-annual sounds better,
That
so I think we
probably
can do
sounds
that.
better because
Yeah,
I think biannual means every 2 years or something like that.
that bi get that gets tricky, but yeah, semi-annual I think is good. I think I
Semi,
like
yeah,
that.
or your twice a year visit with me. This time we're talking about the NFL draft, and this year, just like every year, it is so much fun this time of year. You know, it's funny, and you've known these prospects and you study them and follow them for years. Someone like me, I start looking at mock drafts and stuff starting in like January, and by this time I know like probably the top 50 prospects pretty well just from hearing so much about them. What do you think this year the draft is very strong in? What positions?
It's definitely a wide receiver draft again. I think we talk the top 100 picks first 2 days, round one to three. The wide receiver class is strong. I mean, we could see up. We're definitely going to see three wide receivers go in the top 10, probably potentially two in the top five, and you could have six or seven get drafted in the first round. So another strong receiver group. I think it's also a very good offensive line group as a whole. You know, the offensive tackle class, I think it's going to dip into round two where you can get starter quality offensive tackles. A lot of those offensive tackles are moving to the interior, even to center. And that strengthens the interior line position where a lot of teams have needs there. So I think that's strong. And then I think I'd probably say the defensive line group, defensive tackle, or for the Steelers, more in that, could be more in that multifaceted role. Once again, just the first 2 days is really where this draft is strong as a whole. That defensive line group, we have guys that are not, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, tackles that are 90% plus athletic percentiles all time in the draft. So you have a lot of very athletic big men. And that's always good.
It does seem like a very deep tackle draft, which is great for the Steelers, maybe if they want to do that. What do you think the Steelers are targeting in the first round?
I mean, I think offensive line is definitely priority one. Now, whether that is a tackle, I think is most likely left tackle, right tackle. It's nice they have some flexibility with Broderick Jones showing that he can play right tackle. So I think that gives them some options. And so I think it depends how the board falls. If Talise Fuaga from Oregon State, Demaryius Mims from Georgia, JC Latham from Alabama are there at 20, that could be an easy pick. I think that's probably priority one. I think they're going to take a look at center. Obviously, it's a huge need at this point. Not sure if it'll be a round one shot, but Graham Barton from Duke is one of those tackles this past 2 seasons that can play center, can play guard, can play all five positions on the field. He's pretty much consensus center one, Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. So I think there's some options maybe to move down and take one of those players later in round one. But I think corner is still there. Like the Steelers seem very interested in Nate Wiggins, the corner from Clemson. We've seen this offseason they want to add speed to that defense. Patrick Queen, Dante Jackson, you're getting speed. And I think that's what Nate Wiggins would bring to the table. So he's probably the one corner that I could see them saying, tackles are gone. We think we can wait on a center. We're going to take, the number three corner on our board.
It's going to be very interesting to see what the Steelers do, what they're targeting. But and they desperately need a center. I mean, I think literally there's no centers on the team right now, technically. But if they don't wait, if they don't get a center in the first round, how far can they go to get a starting center in this draft? What round can they get one in like the third round or something?
I think so, and maybe it's me looking a little at this class with some rose-colored glasses, right? I like the interior line group, like I said, the offensive line, the center group, but I think there are going to be guys around three or four that could be starters. Maybe it's not maybe you don't want to Kendrick Green it and pop him in day one, but players that we could put Nate Herbig in for a little stretch and just develop this player a little bit. Tanner Bordellini from Wisconsin is one of my favorites. Super athlete, strong, played in that Wisconsin, both the power run game and then this past season in the spread. So he's versatile. Dominic Pooney from Kansas is another kind of more raw player, but I think has that upside. Bo Lemer from Arkansas, Mason McCormick, South Dakota State. So those players like round 3 to 4 that I think will be around at center, that I think can be starters as rookies at some point. So and as we've seen in the NFL draft, centers fall, right? I mean, Landon Dickerson falling around 2 and then becoming an all-pro. Like centers are not as high a priority for teams as we tend to think, going into the draft, and they tend to fall a little bit. So that's probably good for the Steelers as well.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense to get a center in the first round. The first round, it seems like the experts say you don't get a running back or a center or something like that. You want the high value positions, like what, tackle, cornerback, quarterback, things like that, right?
I mean, that's it, right? It all revolves the positions that really revolve around the QB, quarterback, receiver, offensive tackle, pass rusher, corner. Like the passing game is kind of what you worry about first, because that's going to be bigger. And then running back, center. I think we're getting to a point safety is becoming a day two position. We're not going to have a safety draft in round one this year again. So, we saw that last year. Safeties fell. It's going to happen. I think even tight end to an extent is falling. I mean, how many Pro Bowl tight ends were picked in day two last year? We're only going to have one draft in the first round this year. So you can kind of see the separation happening in the NFL of what positions they value at this point.
What do you think of that tight end, Brock Bowers? I mean, he's been touted as like this awesome tight end for a few years now. Is he really that good?
He is. I think you have to use him creatively. He's not going to be a traditional, inline, two-way, going to block for you on two downs and then be a receiver. He was a weapon at Georgia. And to me, it was seeing him as at 17 years old as a true freshman in the SEC, just clowning future first-round picks. I mean, he was dominating future first-round picks. And to me, it's like, okay, this kid's legit. Like, he's going to only grow from here. So I think you got to use him creatively. He's more of a slot receiver. He has, I think, 2 or 3 rushing touchdowns this year. Some of them were over 50 yards. Like, he's a good athlete that can do a lot of different things. But you can't just be like, oh, he's Travis Kelce, just plug him in. You can't do that. And that's going to, for tight ends, I think situation matters a ton on their success.
Ask Kyle Pitts about that.
Yeah, like I think Brock Bowers will kind of be what we wanted Kyle Pitts to be, because I think Bowers is a little more well-rounded.
I've seen Graham Barton mock to the Steelers at 20. Is it me? Has he? It seems like this is kind of out of nowhere. Has he risen up the hype, or is that? Is that normal for him to be drafted in the 20s?
I think he's definitely risen through this offseason process. And the reason is he played tackle the last 2 years at Duke and was good. Like, I think he would be a round 2 offensive tackle, right? But, and so that's where, myself and a lot of people kind of had him. And then we got to see, some reps that he had taken, practice reps, and then Senior Bowl stuff on the interior at guard and specifically at center. And he was better. He was really good. Like, he looked like he was ready to play center. And you see the traits at tackle. Okay, this could be someone special at that center position. So that's why I think we've seen kind of the rise of him. Now, once again, I don't know if the Steelers are going to pull that trigger 20 if he's sitting there, but I think he's going to go in the first round in that 20 to 30 range. Dallas, Miami. I think there's a lot of teams in that range that could draft him.
Another name I keep seeing is Amarius Mims from the tackle from Georgia. And to me, he's very intriguing, but he's a mystery. He doesn't have a lot of experience and he seems to be get hurt a lot. Do you think the Steelers would be wise to draft him?
I think he's the ultimate upside pick. If you're swinging for the fences of this is going to be a top five right tackle in the league, I think Amarius Mims is probably your best shot at what you can get at 20, right? Outside of the top two tackles, I think he has the highest ceiling of anyone. But like you said, I think there's a lot of downside. The injuries, the inexperience, but didn't allow a sack in his career. It's similar to Broderick Jones, where like not a lot there, but what is there is nearly flawless. And so how do you project that? Is it enough for you to feel comfortable? I mean, he was his relative athletic score was 9.59, so makes him 96 percentile athlete at the tackle position in the NFL draft history. He's phenomenal. You've seen him play with Broderick Jones and have success as bookends. So I think he's intriguing. Do I think he's their top choice at tackle? I don't, but I think he's a choice that if the tackle there's a tackle run and he's still around, you feel comfortable plugging him in at right tackle where you have some other options too. And if you can develop him, you feel comfortable about your offensive line development, then yeah, take that swing.
It makes you wonder when you have a situation like this where a Mims is available and you're thinking about drafting him, and you just had his teammates, you just drafted his teammate last year, how much they rely on Broderick Jones to say, hey, what can you tell us about this guy? And how accurate is that going to be? You know, what if he's your buddy and you're gonna say, oh my God, this is the greatest, this is a future Hall of Famer, you have to draft him because he's your friend, or are you gonna I wonder how that goes.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I think the key thing is you don't want Broderick Jones to say, nah, don't draft him, right? Well, if someone says that, then you're like, okay, we're definitely not
That's a
drafting
huge
this
red
guy.
flag.
Like, okay, you can't do that. You expect him to be rosy. I think a lot of times what you ask those players is, what does he need to work on? What does he need to improve on? Right? You kind of ask those type of questions. And, I think that's where sometimes you can get some of that honesty from former teammates, friends of, hey, here's what he can work on. Here's how he was doing that, right? Like that type of insight, that's where it can be a little bit rare. And you could and Broderick Jones might say, like, hey, Amarius came in and he didn't know anything about footwork. Look at his footwork now. You could see that he can improve on things. And you're like, okay, that's intel that would be useful.
Despite what a player in a certain position, what their actual ability is, it gets overhyped. I'm talking about quarterbacks. I'm hearing as many as six might be drafted in the first round. I'm not sure where they're getting six from, but we know quarterback will probably go the first three picks. What do you think of this whole JJ McCarthy thing? Is he worthy of the hype, and do you think he's actually going to be drafted like in the top 10?
We do this every year, don't we? Don't we? Every single year, they're
Yes.
like, ah, oh, Will Levis is going
Will
four to
Levis, he's
four.
this year's Will Levis.
Malik Willis, Steelers might take him in the first round. He falls to round three, right? We heard it, like Kyle Trask was going to be a first round pick. And, there's all these players every year we pump up because teams need them. Drew Locke, I think, was supposed to be, we pump up these players. I think JJ McCarthy. During the season, I was pretty low on him. I went back to the film a couple times and saw the traits that, okay, could be something. We've never in the modern era had four quarterbacks go in the top nine of the NFL draft. It's never happened. I don't think it's going to happen this year. Like, I don't think this is the magical year where that changes. Maybe I'll eat a bunch of crow on that and there'll be a bunch of people on Twitter come after me because I've said it a bunch. But I think JJ McCarthy is a first round pick. I think he'll go in the top 15. I just don't think it's going to be one, two, three, four, a quarterback. Like it just doesn't happen. We've never had it happen because these players aren't ready. McCarthy didn't throw in the second half against Penn State. I think he threw like 12 passes. He barely threw at all.
It's like 20 some straight runs. Like,
Right. It's not his fault, but like I want to see more passes. That's ideal, especially for a quarterback. So, look, I think 11 to Minnesota, 12 to Denver makes a ton of sense. I think he probably falls there. And saw these mocks having Minnesota trade up for him. I'm like, they're probably just going to get him at 11, and that's probably what they want. And then I think, Michael Penix from Washington, Bo Nix from Oregon, people start plugging into the Broncos and the Raiders. Well, who else needs a quarterback? That's not how it works. I mean, how many teams have we seen just pass almost completely on quarterback? We're like, oh, they really need somebody. They just don't take one, right? If there's not one worth taking, teams aren't going to draft him just because. And when they do, I won't say Kenny Pickett was that way, but perhaps then this is what you get. You get a player that's not worth the pick.
It's crazy. And everything we talk about, and there's been so much talk about all these scenarios, we don't know what the teams are really thinking, or if there are people, there are some insiders like Daniel Jeremiah that know what's going on. I know, I think he predicted the whole Houston thing last year, that they would take Stroud and then trade for Anderson. It's like, obviously he has intel on that, so stuff like that is fun. But otherwise, we don't know what these teams are thinking. We don't know. We like, maybe the Giants will get a quarterback. We don't know. It doesn't make sense, but maybe they will.
I think a lot of these teams that want a quarterback are trying to get up to number three. Like, will the Patriots trade out? Like, I think the Giants have probably made an offer. I think the Vikings have probably made an offer. And if you can't get to three, then we're not going to take one. Like, it doesn't work like we want a quarterback. So either we get to three and take the guy we want, or we're just going to take the next guy at six. Like, that's not how the draft works. There are teams and players that. The Steelers probably have guys not on their board that people have mocked to them, but they're just not going to take them, even if you think that's where the value is, you think that's the position they need. It's a player that doesn't fit, it's a player they don't like, they're not going to take them. I think that's what people forget.
Do you think Caleb Williams is as good as advertised? I mean, he's been hyped in college endlessly, and I've just seen some things where he just, it looks like his mechanics are amazing. All these things are amazing. Do you think he's that good of a prospect?
He is it, like it. Wish I could come on here and just like bash him and hot be it, give you a hot take, but he is. And I think he once again has been that way since he's 17, filling in for Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma and literally carrying a team that should not have gone to the Big 12 championship to the Big 12 championship. And then at USC this past season, I mean, it was I would say maybe the worst defense in the Power Five. Or at least bottom five at USC this past year. And so he was trying to do everything to score 60 points a game to win these games. And you can see it. You can see in the Notre Dame game where things break down and people want to point to it and say, well, that's bad. Like, go back. John Elway's like the greatest quarterback prospect of all time. And there are games he threw two, three interceptions his last year, multiple games. Like it just happens. I think Caleb Williams has the skill set. He has he's not an elite Patrick Mahomes tier arm strength, but the zip is really good in that intermediate. I've seen him hit almost every pass on every route consistently. The way that he freelances, he can get out of the pocket, keeps his eyes down the field. He's a quarterback that can run, but isn't looking to just run like Jaden Daniels from LSU is probably going to go number two. I think Jaden Daniels wants to run. First and foremost, Caleb Williams wants to throw to win. That to me is huge. He's probably going to end up. I've been scouting since 2004, so Ben Roethlisberger's draft. Caleb Williams is probably going to end up as a top five graded quarterback of all time for me. And yeah, it doesn't mean he's just going to be a franchise player, but I think there's a high floor. Like Trevor Lawrence is my top rated quarterback. Trevor Lawrence isn't lighting the world on fire. He's not a Hall of Famer, right? But he's going to be good enough to be a starter for a while. I think Caleb Williams has that floor. And I love what Chicago's doing, bringing in Keenan Allen. They have DJ Moore. They brought in DeAndre Swift. They're going to surround him with talent. And I think that's the way to go.
Interesting. Hopefully he doesn't run up in the stands and cries to his mommy anymore. I don't think that'll fly in the NFL.
Yeah.
So Jaden Daniels to Washington, you think that's a lock? That's what I keep hearing.
I mean, look, I'll never say anything's 100%. They could be full out, but I do think the NFL likes Jaden Daniels a step more than Drake May from North Carolina and JJ McCarthy, like we talked about. Just because, I mean, Daniels, if you look at even some of the advanced analytics, probably the best individual season in college football history this past year. You know, the rushing and the passing, even losing three games, like, I mean, his deep passing, just phenomenal. He needs some work. He's definitely not a polished, you know, completely polished in those short timing routes and under pressure. If he's trying to throw, he definitely takes too many sacks. But yeah, I mean, you could have a Lamar Jackson type of quarterback if you build the offense around correctly. And I think Cliff Kingsbury's offense for Washington is the right. It's very similar to what he ran at LSU with Brian Kelly there. So I think it's a good fit, and that's also going to be the reason to pull that trigger at number two.
In a similar situation to Caleb Williams, where the LSU defense was just awful, and he had to overcome that. Drake May, I hear things that he's just not worth it. His mechanics are bad. This is a mistake if you take him. What do you make of him?
Look, I think him and Daniels have big downside. Like, I think Jaden Daniels and Drake May could both bust, and I wouldn't be overly surprised. I think what Drake May does bring to the table is the size. You know, being over 6'4", 220, and having rushing ability. You know, he's this like big, basically if like Ben Roethlisberger was twice as fast. You know, that's what Drake May is, and so you know. May did a lot of those things that we were used to seeing here from Ben of brushing a guy off because you're big enough to do it and then throwing a great pass. He didn't have much talent around him. They had a good running back. They had, you know, DeVonta Walker's going to get drafted as a receiver in this draft. That's about it. The offensive line was stunk, and May carried that team to a few more wins than it should. But a lot of times that leads to a lack of mechanics. You know, his footwork is messy. You know, he taps those feet way too much, and it can work. You know, Peyton Manning did it, but he's Peyton Manning. You know, if you're not ready to read a defense and have the arm to be consistent, May's just not consistent play to play. And I think that's, there's a lot of coachability that needs to happen for him to succeed, but he certainly has the upside and the talent to do it.
Marvin Harrison Jr., that's another guy that's been hyped for years now. Do you think he is like one of the better wide receiver prospects in a long time?
Yeah, I mean, once again, he'll probably be up there in my top, you know, five or six ever that I've scouted. Once again, you know, it's consistent with these guys. True freshman domination to me is very important, and we saw that in the Rose Bowl. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s true freshman year had four touchdowns against Utah in the Rose Bowl. Like, he had that talent from the get-go. What I love about Harrison isn't just like he's athletic or he's really good, he has body control, whatever, is, man, he sells every route the exact same way. He runs it the exact same way, and his upper body is doing different things than his lower body is doing. So he'll fake that he's going to cut inside, and you see his upper body cutting, but his legs start going the opposite way, and he goes out and he's wide open. You know, that to me is like, there are very few. Larry Fitzgerald was the only receiver that I can recall that did that. And so I think that's going to translate in the NFL immediately, and why he's my wide receiver one for sure.
I've heard him described as Larry Fitzgerald but faster. And if that's the case, he's going to do very well in the NFL. So that's going to be awesome. You've been following some of these guys for what, 5, 10 years now? Some of them like since they were in high school?
I mean, I start, you know, kind of scouting the players that are coming into college football, and in some cases for some of the top guys even earlier than that in high school, to get a sense. So I mean, I've been watching Marvin Harrison Jr. film since he was a junior in high school. Malik Nabers, the LSU receiver as well, was a high recruit. You know, it's one of those high recruits I've been watching for a while, and it's interesting to see their development and see them translate all the way up to this point to kind of what they've been working towards this whole time.
It's amazing. We talked before recording that 5-star recruits actually get drafted. 50% of them get drafted in the first round.
Yeah, it's about 50% get drafted.
Oh, get
So
drafted
get
total.
drafted at all. So, and a lot of them are first round picks, but usually those 5-star recruits are pretty athletic, so even some late guys get a shot taken on them. So it's a fair number. Like I said, compared to the 4-stars, it's about 2 to 3% get drafted, and 3-stars is less than 1% get drafted. So, because there's so many of those players, but we always have the stories, right? Of this guy had 0 stars, and here he is. This guy's a walk-on. We have a couple of those this year. There's going to be some that emerge, and that's awesome. Those are fun stories, but there's also 20,000 other people that were in their shoes that didn't do that. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. These are basically kids we're talking about, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds. And that's amazing. One thing that's different in the past few years is this whole NIL thing, players just jumping from college to college as much as they want to. What do you think that how that changed the draft evaluation process? Do you think a team looks at someone that keeps jumping as a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a case by case basis for NFL teams, and those are questions they're going to ask, right? If you transfer, the question's why. And so you better have a good answer for that, especially now we have multiple transfers happening. And it's funny, but the players that have transferred multiple times aren't at the top of the draft. There are a lot of guys that transferred once, transferred up, or transferred because a coach left. But in terms of players that transfer two times, 3 times, those aren't the top players. Just some that'll get drafted day three, certainly. But we don't see that too often from top players. Now, they just changed the ruling that players can transfer as many times as they want now, no limit. So that might change. But I do think it's an indication where you need to develop in college. You need to develop in a system. And the players that are jumping 3, 4 times or trying to keep finding a place where they can play doesn't always work out. I think those questions are getting asked. It changes how NFL teams look at these players. I think a lot are going to go back to your first team. I think one of the reasons why Jaden Daniels is as high as he is not just his season at LSU, but as a freshman at Arizona State, he was really good. I think people forget that. That's something to go back to and see a player in a different system and how they did.
Yeah. I wonder if you get him from if a player has gone to like two or three different schools or something like that, that gives you a larger pool of people to talk to about what you think about these people. It's funny with the Steelers that they kind of telegraph who they're going after, because it seems like if Tomlin goes to their pro day and they interview him at the combine, and I think there's one other one if they go to the whatever the whatever
Really?
there's like three things. If they talk to him a lot, there's a good chance they're going to draft him. Are all teams like that, or are there surprises that they just draft people blind?
No, all teams are definitely not like that. The Steelers kind of have this way. I think usually when if they brought them in for one of those top 30 visits, that's usually a good indication that they're interested. Now, they have drafted guys, obviously not that they didn't bring in for a visit, but it's usually a good indication. A lot of teams aren't like that. There are some teams that don't send their coach to a pro day of guys that they're super interested in, especially if they're from a school where there's only one or two prospects. Like, you don't want to tip your hat there. That certainly happens. But the Steelers have had success, I think, in feeling comfortable with players. Because there's been players that have fit those criteria they haven't drafted, right? The ones they do draft fit those criteria, but there have been ones that fit that criteria they don't. I think maybe from learning about some of those players, they're like, no, we were going to pass as well.
Interesting. So they might. So the talking to them a lot just might actually turn them off from a player.
Yeah, I think it's both ways, right? You find players you really like, and you find players we're out. So I think it is a good indication of the players they're interested in, but I don't think their board is all the players they talk to. I think there are guys they probably talk to a bunch and they're like, we want to pass that player. But the fact they get to know the players so well, I think is huge. So it's different. I mean, we saw the Washington Commanders this week take the three top quarterback prospects out to Topgolf, like together, all together.
Okay.
Like, so teams operate differently in how they're figuring out who these guys are and what their makeup is.
It is crazy that for a player, especially right now, it wasn't today the last day of that they could visit teams.
Yes.
It is crazy because sometimes they re you know some of these players get like 32 requests for interviews, and they have to evaluate. It's like, do you really you are you really going to draft me? What's going on here? So, I mean, that could get overwhelming for a player to visit every team in the league.
Yeah, I always, it'd be one thing if I could pull back the curtain on NFL teams too to see how do you really decide who you're bringing in for a visit? Because some teams, it's a bunch of first round, second round talents, and some teams it's like, oh, these guys are getting drafted before round six. That's
Yeah,
how you
yeah.
operate. How do you really decide who that player is? Is there like character stuff that I'm gonna bring them in, or injury stuff, or we need to see them work out privately? I'm not sure. But it's interesting just the different approaches that teams have. And some teams, I think the New Orleans Saints have not drafted a player they've brought in for a top 30 visit in like a decade. Like, have not drafted one of them in a long time. It's wild.
So, do you think they do that to show that they're mysterious or something, or
Yeah, Mickey Loomis, their GM, is a weirdo. So it wouldn't surprise me. That's the case. Or like Bill Belichick always talked about the Patriots. He'd bring guys in that he thought division rivals are going to draft, or quarterbacks he might face later, so he could get intel on them when he played them later.
okay. I know, Tomlin likes to talk to people that they may necessarily not have a chance of drafting, but maybe 4 years down the line when they're free agents, maybe he'll remember that they talked to him or something like that, because we know he's not going anywhere.
Right. Or maybe they trade with the Bears for them. You never know
There
how things could happen.
you go. Caleb Williams,
Yeah,
the starting quarterback for the Steelers in 2029. You heard it here
lock
first.
it in, lock it in.
Like, in your mock draft on draftcountdown.com, you have Talise Fuaga, the tackle from Oregon State, being taken by the Steelers at 20. Do you think, it's from what I've heard, that's a very good prospect.
Yeah, I really the hold up. I think if he's there, I think they take him. I think Talise Fuaga is probably, I'm not gonna say like the top guy on their board, but the top realistic choice on their board. A plug and play right tackle who is just nasty in the run game and sets that edge well. The footwork, the leverage, the bend is really good. I don't know if he's gonna be there. Like, I would guess probably not, but it could be. I don't think Broderick Jones would be available where he was. Maybe I could do the same, to trade up two, three picks and take him. That can happen too.
It seems very possible that the Steelers will trade up, even if, five or six picks like they did last year, or heck, maybe even they'll trade down. I don't know. That's, I mean, there's with this with Omar Khan, anything's possible. It's not like, Kevin Colbert.
Right, which I love. I don't know how you feel, but I it's been kind of refreshing to have a GM that's willing to go out and do some stuff, and if it doesn't work, at least you tried. That's always my thing.
Yeah. You have the Penn State tackle Olu Fashanu going 13 to the Raiders. This is a guy seems like he's been one of the top tackle prospects for years, and I've heard like he could have gone, like in some years he could have gone top five. Is it just because there's just so many other, good players ahead of him, or is he still an elite tackle prospect?
I still really like him. I mean, he's my number two tackle, and I would he's my a top 10 player in the draft for me. I'm not sure that's the case for every team. I think with Olufoshanu, he had a rougher year this year than last season. The Ohio State game second half was rough, and so I think there's some you got to see some of the weaknesses in his game that might exist. I don't think he falls too far. Like I think that 10 to 15 range, he will be gone for sure. But because he still has the raw strength, he still has the athletic ability. The kick slide's still beautiful. Like all the things you want in a left tackle, I think he has those traits. Like we talk about Caleb Williams, you have bad games sometimes. You try to do too much, and then he was trying to do too much. So I think a team could get a steal really if he falls into that Raiders Saints, 10 to 15 range.
Yeah. So where can people find you, follow you, and get more of your work?
Yeah, check out draftcountdown.com. I'll have a 7-round mock draft the day before the draft, so it'll be my final one. Might go up the day of. I'll have my top 100 big board as well, which award winning. I've won the top 100 contest twice. So this year, I've watched 2,200 prospects. So I actually have a top 500 board on the site. So yeah, you can check that out at Draft Countdown or download our podcast, The Draft Countdown.
2200.
I have something on them now. Some of the players are from schools I've never heard of. I'm YouTubing news clips of plays or grainy D3 footage, but I have some note on 2,200 players in this draft.
So, like on Saturdays in the fall, is your eyes glued to the TV just watching all the college football games?
Yeah, I usually have like 4 games going at once, and then I go back through the week and I'm watching, as many as possible. So most of the top guys, I've watched every game they played this past year, and for a lot of the big schools.
So what was this award you won?
So the huddlereport.com does 2 contests every year. They do a top 100 board, basically like my top 100 players compared to the top 100 that are drafted. I've had the best top 100 twice.
Wow.
Since I've done it. And so I'm top 13, 13 on the 5-year average all time for that, which will go up after this year. And then mock draft wise, I've never won. I've never had the best mock draft, but I am 6th in the 5-year average for most accurate mock drafts. So ahead of your Daniel Jeremiah's and Mel Kiper's and those guys.
Very impressive. That's, yeah. I mean, you'd have to be a mind reader. All you're doing is evaluating the best players. We don't know what the heck these teams are actually thinking or
Yeah,
what their evaluations are. So
that's the tough part. Yeah.
that is super impressive. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time. And I guess I'll see you in a few months to talk fantasy football.
Yeah, we'll do it. Thanks, man.
All right, see you.